The Sixth Man by David Baldacci. Read by Ron McLarty with Orla Cassidy. Abridged by Beckett Royce.
To David Young and Jamie Rabb, the dynamic duo of publishing, and my friends. The only thing potentially worse than not being able to see the forest for the trees is not being able to see the trees because of the forest. Anonymous.
Make it stop!
The man hunched over the cold metal table, his body curled tight, eyes screwed shut, his voice cracking. He sucked in each breath and let it out like it would be his last. Through headphones, a fast blast of words filled his ear canals and then flooded his brain. An array of sensors was strapped into a heavy cloth harness that was buckled over his torso. He also wore a cap with electrodes attached that measured his brain waves. The room was brightly lit. He started weeping. On the wall inside the room with the sobbing man, the screen was 8 feet wide and 6 feet tall. It seemed perfectly designed for watching NFL football. However, the digital images racing across its face were not huge men in uniform knocking brain cells out of each other. This was top, top secret data, to which very few people in the government would be privy. Collectively, and to the experienced eye, they were stunning in revealing the clandestine activities going on around the globe. There were crystal-clear pictures of suspicious troop movements in Korea along the 38th parallel. Satellite images of construction projects in Iran showing underground missile silos that looked like huge pencil holders carved in the dirt, along with boiling thermal silhouettes of a working nuclear reactor. In Pakistan, high-altitude surveillance photos of the aftermath of a terrorist explosion at a market where vegetables and body parts held equal sections of the ground. In Russia, there was real-time video of a caravan of military trucks on a mission that might push the world into another global war. From thousands of federally funded intelligence fusion centers spread across the United States, flowed information on suspicious activities being carried out either by Americans or by foreigners operating domestically. And on it poured, from all corners of the globe, delivered en masse in high definition. This exercise was known, in the topmost echelon of the intelligence community, as the Wall. The man hunched over the metal table was small and lean. He was 31 years old, but looked like he had aged 10 years in the last 4 hours.
"Please, make it stop. I can't take this. I can't do this."
At this comment, the tallest man behind the mirror stirred. His name was Peter Bunting. He was 47 years old, and this was, plain and simple, his operation, his ambition, his life. He lived and breathed it. Bunting looked down at the electronic tablet he was holding. He had asked the man numerous questions, the answers for which could be found in the data flow. He hadn't gotten a single response.
"Please tell me this is someone's screwed-up idea of a joke," he finally said, only he knew it wasn't. People here did not kid about anything. An older, shorter man in a wrinkled dress shirt spread his hands in a gesture of helplessness.
"The problem is he's classified as an E5, Mr. Bunting."
"Well, this 5 ain't cutting it, obviously," shot back Bunting.
They turned to look through the glass once more as the man in the room ripped off the headphones and screamed,
"I want out! Now! No one said it would be like this!"
Bunting dropped his tablet on the table and slumped against the wall. The man in the room was Sohan Sharma. He had been their last best hope to fill the position of the analyst.
"Sir," said the youngest man in the group.
Bunting